Welcome to Uproar in the Studio, your bi-weekly New York-based Chinese blockbuster podcast. I'm Noah.
I'm Reza.
I'm Andrew.
This week we're talking about Dying to Survive, released on July 5th, 2018. It made more than $450 million. We're going to be talking about the movie from beginning to end. You don't have to see it, we'll give a synopsis, but if you want to watch it unspoiled, maybe listen to the show after.
Later, we'll be talking with Hao Zhang, postdoctoral researcher at Harvard University's China Health Partnership.
But first, we're talking about the movie with Mitch Moxley, author of Apologies to My Censor, about his 6 years as a reporter in China. He's published great work on Chinese blockbusters in The Atavist and The New York Times, and an article about a North Korean film festival over at GQ, where, full disclosure, I fact-checked his work. Here's our conversation.
The year is 2003. Cheng Yang, a divorcee with an aphrodisiac shop, is almost at rock bottom as his sales fall and his wife and son threaten to leave to America. His life turns around when he is approached by Liu Yang, a leukemia patient desperate for medication. The drugs permitted by the Chinese government are far too expensive, so Liu asks Cheng to help him smuggle cheap but effective imitation drugs from India, offering him a large profit if he can pull through. What starts off as a cash grab becomes a life's mission as Cheng becomes more and more immersed in the world of cancer patients, making new friends and losing loved ones to disease. When Cheng is found by the police and sentenced, the people of his city recognize him as a hero. Based on a true story and sure to bring a tear to the eye, this is Dying to Survive.
So, just to start off, a general question for both of you. What did you guys think of the film, starting with Mitch?
I actually liked it. I had pretty low expectations. I actually just finished watching it. And I had really low expectations, but I thought, you know, overall, it was a pretty competent movie. Like, obviously, you know, there's a lot of kind of tropes that, you know, it's, you know, very similar to Dallas Buyers Club. And there's also scenes that are just, you know, taken from other movies as well. But overall, just in terms of, you know, the quality of the acting and direction, and I thought it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think of the bunch that we've seen of the lower end of the top 10, this is the only one we could take seriously as not just like pure entertainment.
Yeah.
Reza, what do you think?
Like you said, I think so far of all the movies we've seen, this was the first movie, right? Like, it had like a proper plot. I was sad during parts of it, and I don't usually watch sad movies, I think, so I don't know. I really felt this one.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of like plain. It was very straightforward, but it was still a change of pace from just the blockbuster action or something.
What else have you guys seen, though, curiously?
So we watched The X-Files. It's like this series about, you know, young people in Chengdu trying to have relationships and failing.
Okay.
Sort of like a lot of Apology to My Censor.
Yeah.
It all started with Wolf Warrior 2.
Yeah, of course. Right. But of the lower end of the list that we've covered for the podcast itself, we've done like Hello, Mr. Billionaire.
Monster Hunt 1 and 2.
Yeah, it's all movies that have come out in the last 2 years because the lists keep shifting.
Right.
One interesting thing about this one, though, is that it seems strange to me that it got through the censors.
Totally. I thought that myself.
Was there anything about it that, like, made sense to you as, like, oh, maybe they changed this so it could work?
I don't know. I mean, the whole time I was just wondering that very same thing. Like, how did this get past the only thing maybe is that it's a true story. Did you know that it's a
story?
And I wonder if it was if that story was so well known in China that it was just for government censors, they just didn't really have a choice but to let it go through. I don't know, that's my only theory.
My theory was that it was the like humanity of the cop that showed through. The system is still human, sort of.
Yeah, could be. But it is interesting that, you know, that cop obviously had, he came around as a character, but it didn't portray the police positively, really.
No, they were in cahoots with the foreign company.
Well, yeah, it's just a little baffling. I don't know how that, interesting.
I mean, there's always, like, at least an article a week about she's censorship, and I feel like this really just doesn't fit the mold of the general narrative of the censorship in the country.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Another thing was, did you yourself have any, I mean, having lived in China for 6 years, I suppose you had to go to the doctor sometimes.
Yeah.
Did any of this ring true for you?
Actually, I had pretty good experience. Well, when I lived in China, I normally went to this clinic called SOS International, which was like an expat clinic. So it was, you know, fairly expensive and very well run. But I did do some, I did a couple times go to Chinese hospitals. And I actually, you know, I had pretty good experiences, really. Like they, you know, was well treated. The care was pretty good. It was really affordable. Yeah, so I didn't really have any experiences like this, no.
Oh. And then there's the sort of international angle with the Bollywood movie sort of crossover. Reza, did you have any thoughts on that?
Well, the movie started off with basically my favorite song from the ages of 2 to 5, with like the movie I watched at least 100 times just on cassette as a kid. So I didn't know if I was watching like a wrong dub or something. It just made no sense to me. But I really, by the end of the movie, really liked that kind of BRIC solidarity, or, you know, just bringing Indian drugs into the system. It was cool, right? Like, he had to smuggle it through, like, a kitchen on a boat or something.
I mean, that's another thing that comes up in Apology to My Censor, right? Like, tons and tons of drugs somehow getting into the country despite seemingly strict regulations.
Yeah. Narcotics you're referring to, I guess.
Yeah. Not cancer drugs, I guess, but also cancer drugs. I would think it would go through some of the same channels, though.
Right when I moved to China, I was surprised how easy it was to get drugs. Like, it just was not hard. It was easier to get it there than, you know, I'd ever encountered before. The running theory, I have no idea if this is true or not, but the theory was that you know, somehow the military had to be involved in it because they were fairly openly dealing drugs. Like, you could just walk up to somebody and ask for, you know, something, and they'd walk around the corner and give it to you. So somebody must, and this would happen within a few blocks of a police station. So somebody must have known, and like, you know, the theory was like the ports were controlled by the military, and they were, you know, who knows though.
Well, the port cops in this movie weren't particularly bright, I guess. But yeah. Maybe this is earlier, right? Because this was 2003 and then a little bit later that decade.
Yeah.
There's an interesting aspect in the character Yellow Hair that I thought was kind of cool, and that sort of like coming into the big city from out of town type of thing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he, I think, instigated a lot of the change in the main character, Yang, right? Because his first encounter with Yellow Hair was Yellow Hair robbing him, and him kind of calling him Robin Hood for distributing the cancer drugs to other poor people. And then by the end of the movie, Yang gets called Robin Hood as like a, you know, like a weird callback. But like we said, there was actual character growth throughout this movie, which was nice to watch.
Surprising, unusual. Yeah, I find his morality interesting in that it is that, like we were talking about before, he's going against the laws, but in a sort of, he's sort of envisioning a communist ideal through individual work, maybe? Or is that too far-fetched?
I think it's a bit far-fetched, dude. I think he was a good guy. I think he was like a really good force in the movie, and he made everybody better. With, like, very little words.
Yellow Hair we're talking about.
Yes.
No, I was thinking Yellow Hair, but also the main character.
Yeah.
In that he's, like, by the end, he's a factory owner who's driving himself into poverty. Or not quite poverty. Well, I guess if you go to prison, that's a form of poverty, maybe. Mm-hmm. Although, but he drives himself into destitution as a factory owner, by trying to save people with these underpriced drugs. So, I don't know. I feel like maybe that's some textual evidence for my communism on an individual level theory.
I think he sort of martyrs himself. I mean, he says he's paying everybody back, right? When he's taking the losses of like hundreds of thousands of yuan a month, I guess.
I was confused like by too that sad line. About that. Because he was selling it quite cheap before, right?
But he was making no money prior to that either.
I suppose so. Did you pick up on the martyrdom theme, Mitch?
A little bit, because I feel like when he gets into a fight with the cop in the hospital there.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically acknowledging that he was part of this, you know, the conspiracy, right? So it seemed like, you know, he did kind of become a bit of a martyr. Certainly, you know, that was, I feel like, a theme at the end in the trial and everything.
Yeah.
Especially when he's being driven down, right? Driven out of the courthouse to the prison, and the drivers slow down for him.
With all the patients on the outside there.
Yeah.
All of them taking off their masks, showing their faces.
Uh-huh.
So glorious.
Why do you think? So in the real story, it was an actual patient who did this, and the story is totally different. But why do you think they decided to make the character just like a kind of everyman and not a patient?
Well, they give him a father who's a patient, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
But no, that's a good point. I was thinking it was more for like mobility reasons. Do you know what I mean? Like, just so he's more of a dynamic character who's.
I guess there's more room for him to have a character arc.
Yeah, that's true.
When he doesn't need it for his own survival.
It's also probably nice PR to have like just a regular guy doing all this, right? Like he's not obligated to.
That's true. And also just there is like a theme throughout most of the movies we've been watching where it is kind of an everyman. Even, you know, Meng in X-Files is sort of toned down in a way.
Just a plain guy.
Yeah, exactly. Someone for the audience to identify with.
You want to talk about the first 10 minutes of the movie? I thought those were like, I had to stop after the first 10 minutes for like a couple of minutes. It was too much for me. And then I messaged you guys. I was just like, this is if it keeps being this sad, I don't know if I could do this. But I think they really turned it around pretty quickly with the smuggling.
Yeah, I think there were like some weird conflicting, like it seemed like genres were clashing throughout some of this movie. Uh-huh. But like there was the definite hardcore drama, but also there were like chase scenes that made it like a police action flick and. Sometimes it was pure comedy, like the manager at the strip club being paid to strip.
Oh, that was great. But what's her name? The dancer had like tears in her eyes watching her boss dance on the pole. I was like, wow, nice.
And the main actor, he's got like a history of mostly doing comedies. And so it's interesting. I think this is him trying to break into... successfully trying to break into drama.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. He had a lot of charisma. He was pretty easy to sympathize with.
And also, we could also talk about the subplot with the son. Because as with a lot of these movies, you know, there's the political themes, but there's also the underlying theme in so many of them is family.
Mm-hmm.
And with the son going abroad, that seems is like a... I don't know if that's also some sort of political messaging. You know, family is broken up by people leaving the country. I don't know. What did you guys think of that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how... It's obviously a thing where wealthy people in China are, you know, have been leaving. I don't know if it's something that's talked about that often. I don't remember. It's been a while since I lived there. Yeah.
It was super reflective of, like, you know, in the first third of the movie, he's poor, and it seems like he has to, you know, we have that lawyer scene where they're looking to compensate him for immigrating his son, mm-hmm. and then he breaks through, and the son's, it seems, he doesn't show up too much, but he's fairly happy, and then he's starting to cut losses again, and then he has to send his son away.
Right.
So it was, like, pretty just with the how much money he's making kind of deal.
Do you think the son was in there just so, like, he would have something major to lose? Like, to give him a sense of stakes?
Yeah. Actually, I missed what happened to his father. Does his father die really early in the thing?
No, he ends up like getting him that surgery, right? And then he seems to be like kind of much more functioning in the hospital. And the son was in that scene too.
Right.
But I think that was the last of it.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's not super well paid off in any way, or it's like a loose end that's not tied up.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of, I'm trying to think of why they had the son, because they've given the motivation that he has to get these drugs is, you know, one is financial, but two is his father. And yeah, it doesn't sound like he has it's not like he needs a certain amount of money in order to like keep his son or be, you know, you know what I mean? Like to be.
Yeah. Because so he's not living with him.
Weird. It's a strange, I don't really know why they have the son.
That sneaker scene was touching, I guess, in the beginning, but yeah, he didn't really have an important scene.
But I mean,
sent off.
Getting sent off, I thought, was like a touching moment. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just a sympathy building thing.
Yeah,
I feel like maybe he was a prop more for the cop, even by the end of the movie, than the main character, right? Because he's seeing what his, you know, ex-brother-in-law is going through, rather than in the beginning, he's like, I'm going to kill you, dude. Like, so the son kind of helps proxy that through.
Yeah. And then they have that, like, awkward drink at the end. There's just so many small things. Like, on a huge level, I think this, on the biggest possible level, the movie works both dramatically and didactically. But it does have these, like, loose ends and some pacing things that make it strange.
Yeah,
imperfect and interesting in the way that a lot of these movies are, but also seemingly well planned out. For instance, there was that like visually well planned out, not made on the fly like some of I was reading your article in the Atavist about Empires of the Deep. Mm-hmm. How they only got a shot or two. It seemed like they spent time on this one, especially for like that there was a few minute sequence, maybe not even a few minute, but maybe a few minute sequence in India with just this like luxuriously spraying gas, I guess, smoke, fog, something like that. And it was
That was an interesting scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he ends up seeing like Kali, I think. Right, like the
yeah, with all the hands.
I don't know what that really meant, though. What do you think?
I wasn't really clear on what they were trying to go for in that scene.
Yeah,
there was like loose spiritual moments in this movie, right? Because we have like the father with leukemia, who, you know, keeps saying like God bless you, God bless you, and then he keeps bringing up what like Buddha sayings. And he's got like little priest. Idols. Yeah.
Yeah, to the priest as Christ's sayings.
And then the Indian guy is like apprehended at a temple. I don't know. There was like loose themes. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
And also just going off that, the Christianity of that they had a Christian character so central seemed interesting to me. Right. Because it's a country that's resisted Christianity historically,
yeah,
you know, with the Boxer uprising and everything, and more recently obviously, so it's strange to have this central character. And I guess if it's a true story, it's a true story, but obviously they were willing to make other changes.
Maybe there was like a big social network effect on this movie that we're not, you know, completely clear on, that it was just a huge story that everybody can resonate with, especially like the healthcare angle. You know, people just dying. There was that scene, I think, that really got me, where the old lady went up to the cop and he was just like, you know, we're going to die. Like, we're just waiting to die if you arrest this man. And that was just like, you know, it changed him a bit.
That was so effectively plain spoken, too.
Yeah.
Just going back to the Christian character, that is really unusual, come to think of it. Like, I'm not totally up on what's going on in China, you know, dealing with how the government deals with Christianity. But I do remember that you had to practice in certain churches that were, you know, approved by the state, and it certainly wasn't something that was encouraged in China. And so it's interesting, like, you know, especially in the movie that it seems strange that it got through censors and then also has a prominent Christian character in the middle. It's just kind of unusual.
Yeah, I remember reading in your section in your book about the African immigrants with their unlicensed prayer spaces.
Yeah, I did this story in Guangzhou where we went and spent time with the African community down there. And we met, you know, a couple ministers, I guess. And yeah, they had practiced in these kind of house churches, and they were always nervous about getting found out. Churches were frequently closed. They had to move them around a lot. So yeah, it's interesting.
And the other strange thing, apart from how this movie got through censorship, is that it's because it's transgressive that it was such a huge hit, but it's, you know, shifting top tens aside, it's somewhere around the sixth highest grossing Chinese film of all time right now.
Yeah.
There were also multiple responses actually from the government in response to the movie, which is huge, I think, for a Chinese movie, right? I mean, less than 2 weeks after the movie dropped, I think the government announced 36 new drugs to the reimbursement list.
That's crazy.
I mean, just... like reform through film as a theme is crazy to think about.
Yeah. Did you guys read anything about any theories on why this why it got approved or
We couldn't find anything, but it does keep coming up in, like, if we've been reading various like healthcare policy people, and so even in the New York Times, when they talk about changing healthcare policy related to cancer, they bring up this movie.
Interesting.
And so I guess it's been a spur for conversation outside of the government policy centers.
The articles about this aren't even too different from, you know, like Shkreli articles in America, you know, where it's just, look what they're doing. Like, and it's just, everybody agrees that drug prices are too high. So I think the government just, it's hard to keep a lid on something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in that scene in this movie, you know, where the associate kind of like sends out a ping on instant messaging and just gets... looks like thousands of responses right away for like the 500 price point. I mean, yeah, that's, how do you stop that, right? Like people trying to just survive.
I mean, yeah, maybe it's maybe what made this movie so hard to censor was that its message is that simple, you know, kind of let people live. But I guess things have been censored with that message before. It's very strange.
India was in like a weird light in this movie too, right? Like it was their pharmacy for the poor people throughout China, but most of the shots of India were just like slums also.
Right.
Mm.
So it was just the office and slums and then the ship.
I looked up the guy who plays the ship captain. He's in there for like a 30-second speaking role, but his English is much better than that. So he played up a sort of, he played up that element that they were also playing up with by including mostly shots of slums, I think.
And he did like that very Indian negotiating thing.
Yeah. Although that's like, bartering isn't exclusively Indian. That's
a thing. It was like a very China Bollywood as well, scene. It was like a very Bollywood scene though.
What do you mean? Just, how do you mean?
Just like, he was negotiating all the, like, Yong took out all the money he had, so he had no negotiating to do, and he just kept asking for more. And it's just kind of a trope that will show up in movies.
But it's not a co-production, this one, which is...
I was really looking for something like that, but yeah.
Because there are, like, Jackie Chan did a big co-production a couple of years ago with Bollywood. It's not unheard of for them to cross over those markets, but... this is, I guess, specifically a Chinese movie for Chinese people. I think we might have covered it. Do we have last thoughts?
My only last thought is just, you know, scrolling through the list of the top, you know, 10 Chinese movies and even all like going farther down than that. Like this one seems pretty different than the rest of them. And I guess, you know, I don't know, like, I'm a little out of touch with what's going on in China right now. But, you know, it's encouraging that a movie like this got made, got past censors, and did well, because, you know, at the very least, it's not like some space blockbuster or something like that.
Space, they make good space blockbusters.
Yeah, we watched Wandering Earth recently. It was so good.
I haven't lived in China for 6 years, and I was just kind of like had my fill of Chinese movies, and I had written quite a bit about you know, Chinese movies and stuff like that. So I had taken a break over the last few years, but a couple friends are like, we should go to see this Wandering Earth movie. It's breaking records. And yeah,
it's literally the biggest movie of the year, like in the world.
Really?
Well, it was for a while. I think the new Marvel movie might have passed it. But
oh wow,
yeah,
that sucks. I gotta go check that out to see how much worse it is.
I mean, it probably is. Wandering Earth was incredible, but yeah, no. To the point of this being a because they do make movies like this that get released as art films, like I'm thinking of Touch of Sin and that sort of thing, but they don't get huge like this one did. Which is interesting.
I mean, we interview people all the time who bring up like good movies that we just have never heard of because they get nowhere near the list.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Thanks to Mitch Moxley. Next, we speak with Hao Zheng. She's worked on provider payment reform in her home province of Hainan in central China and continues to work in the field of Chinese health economics. Hao kindly gave us her own outlook on the state of Chinese healthcare. Here's our conversation. Hao, if you could just start off with maybe talk us through how much or generally how Chinese healthcare has maybe changed over the last 15 to 20 years.
Wow.
Big like, question. You know,
okay. We started, so that's about like early, well, at the beginning of this millennium. So back then, well, the urban employees are basically well insured. They have a more like government administered health insurance, but the urban residents and rural residents, they don't have they're not well covered by health insurance. Most of them are not insured. Like gradually, in the first decade of the millennium, China started rolling out health insurance for rural residents and then urban residents. Because these health insurance schemes, they are funded by the local government. So richer areas, they were able to provide more generous insurance packages, but the poor and remote areas, they really suffer a lot. While the central government provided a lot of funding, but the benefit package is still very poor.
Is there a particular reason that more of an initiative from the government to cover more? I guess in the last 15 years, is there like a forum for maybe public pressure for this or?
Yeah, because people are feeling the increase of healthcare expenditure. Okay. It's been rising dramatically, much faster than GDP and income.
What's driven that?
Then we have to look further back. So before the economic reform, the government funded the hospitals. But after we introduced the market economy, government reduced their funding, so hospitals operated like profit-seeking entities.
Mm-hmm.
They try to over-prescribe drugs and tests so that they can make money. And these all come from the patient.
So did that go against... to me, it seems to... That there's a private healthcare system seems to be a real move away from a sort of state ideology in a very major way, but
well, there's new public hospitals.
Did the quality vary from public to private pretty radically?
We don't have a big private sector. Most of the hospitals are public. Well, in terms of service volume, most of the services are provided by public hospitals. Like on paper, they're public hospitals, but government funding accounted for maybe less than 20% of their total revenue. So they have to generate most of the revenue on their own by providing services and prescribing drugs and screening.
So on those drugs, does the government also play a part in the development and the marketing of those drugs, or is that handled more by a private sector?
That's more private.
I guess with the shift to more private sector healthcare, there must be, I guess, now more room for private health insurance.
We don't have a big private sector we have universal coverage now, but the major health insurance schemes, they're social insurance schemes. They're not private. So private players, it's quite small now, even nowadays in China.
To go specifically to the movie Dying to Survive, did that make a major splash in healthcare circles when it came out?
Yeah, it generated a lot of debate.
Before the movie had dropped, was the like true story that the movie is based off also a big, you know, like deal in the media, or did the movie really push it?
I think the case was known more in the medical circle. Like some of the doctors are probably more familiar with the case, but it wasn't until the movie that the general public came to realize the problem.
And so did the debate lead to actual policy change? Did the protests or anything that led to that sort of policy change?
I think the case led to some policy change. So basically they said that if people make some drugs based on, you know, some old recipes, or they get a small quantity of drugs that are not approved by the Chinese government, as long as it's small quantity and doesn't hurt other people or delay the treatment, then people won't be found guilty. They don't see it as a crime.
So you did mention that there's been, first starting at the beginning of the millennium, top down for rural coverage, and then urban coverage. It starts off as like a very fee-for-service type model, right? Once the market economy came in. But I was reading the realignment health system incentives project that pushed with Harvard. And I was just wondering, like, progress, I guess, towards a more value-based system and how it's being received.
I think it's really slow. We still don't have organization that does evaluation of different kinds of treatment. It's not like in the UK where they have NICE. I think it's called National Institute for Health and Care Excellence. So they do a lot of evaluation of different treatments, and then they give recommendations on what's high quality care. And there are similar agencies and systems in the US too, but that is absent in China.
Is this a factor of, I guess, China just being such a large country and the decentralization of the healthcare system? Like, not keeping up fee schedules throughout the country and...
Yeah, because different provinces vary a lot. So currently the major insurance schemes, the benefit packages also vary, of course, across provinces and also across cities and even across counties. It's highly dependent on local fiscal funding and disease profile and just habits.
Sorry, how do you mean habits?
Physicians' habits and patients' habits. Like they have certain preferences for certain drugs, and they just keep using it.
So depending on which city you live in, you could be covered by the universal healthcare differently?
Right. They're all called the same name. It's just the coverage and the reimbursement rates and all kinds of detailed regulations will be different.
So healthcare is like a really big talking point in America, especially like right now with 2020 coming up. Yeah. I was wondering what public perception of national healthcare is like in China. Are people generally pleased with the services? Is there a lot of debate as to, you know, specific improvements that need to be made? Like, because you did mention it as universal healthcare, right? And that's something that we're so far from here.
I think people are still complaining about the coverage. The reimbursement is still low, shallow, like fancy cancer drugs or basically new drugs. They're still not covered by the health insurance scheme because it's basic health insurance scheme. It only covers very basic services.
Are there supplementary health insurance schemes that people go into, or what? If not, what do they do at that point?
There are private insurance plans, but that's quite expensive. And the government is also setting aside some money to do provide second reimbursement. So if you have a certain diseases, after you get reimbursement from this basic health insurance scheme, there will be another reimbursement coming from like a chronic disease funds.
So at the end of Dying to Survive, when he's getting driven away from the prison, it seems as if the problem that he was trying to fight of not people not being able to afford the medication because it's not covered by insurance, it seems as if that's entirely solved. But in reality, is that the case? Is that the case that people can get this medication that they need, or is this problem still very much a problem?
I vaguely remember about half of the provinces included this Gleevec.
Yeah,
the drug.
Leukemia drug.
Yeah. So about half of the provinces added it to the insurance package. So if you're in that half of the provinces, then you will be covered.
Are average people, like just regular patients, aware of these inequalities of coverage, generally, as far as you know?
Well, I'm not entirely sure.
Sure.
But I think they should know.
And does it seem like it's become more of a priority for the central government to even those out? Or
yeah. So the government is promoting a higher level of risk pooling, because at the moment, for example, the health insurance for rural residents, it's the funding is generally pooled at the county level, and the government is asking. The central government is asking local governments to pool the funds at city level.
But even so, there would still likely be an inequality between the city level. Has there been any movement towards centralizing it even more radically on towards a more national level?
I don't think that's feasible right now.
What are the stumbling blocks there?
Well, because the economic disparity is too big. The richer provinces won't feel that's fair for them.
What was the situation like in Henan province where you've worked?
Well, in that province, in my province, the inequality is really huge. We have like one really big hospital that has very good doctors and about 10,000 hospital beds.
Wow.
Yeah, that I think it's probably the largest hospital
In the country.
Definitely in the country, maybe in the world.
Wow!
I'm not entirely sure, but I think it's probably the largest in the world. Yeah, a lot of rural residents go there if they think they have like a complicated condition. While many county or township hospitals, their beds are not filled. But in this hospital, the beds were all filled.
For people, like, there's a character in Dying to Survive that's basically become a healthcare migrant, and that he's had to, you know, shift himself from a rural place to a central one to have access to healthcare. Is that a problem? Is that something that people see happening, like people moving closer to that major hospital?
That's what you see in my province too.
So just for my own personal clarification, this disparity is based purely on province. It's not based at all on income level. So somebody who has maybe a moderate salary in a province that doesn't have the same, the greatest healthcare coverage would still have worse coverage than, say, the poorest person in a province that does have that coverage.
Yeah, very likely.
Okay.
But I suppose there must be a way around that for people who do have quite a high income.
What do you mean by supplementary plan?
Oh, so, sorry, for the people would go for that expensive private health insurance that you mentioned?
That's very expensive.
Can you give us some idea of like what sort of people would be going for that? Like, would it literally just be management class people?
I think so. White collar with high income.
So is it really as easy enough as somebody from rural China moving to a much more rich province, healthcare at that level, just by being a migrant? Or are there stumbling blocks there in terms of like him or her contributing to the risk pooling at that stage as a migrant?
So there is a registration system in China. You enroll in the health insurance scheme where you're registered at. Even if you travel, for example, for a rural resident to travel to Beijing, he won't be able to enroll in the health insurance provided by the Beijing government.
And not at all?
He will probably pay most of his medical bills out of pocket. So there is a huge financial barrier. And when you travel to Beijing, the patient will have to go with his or her families, and accommodation and transportation and everything, it will be a huge cost.
So when you're in that kind of situation and you do have to pay out of pocket and it comes to that, how do the prices for that compare to other nations that are mostly dominated by private health insurance?
I think healthcare in China is still relatively cheap. Because we have price regulation regarding services. So the services are really cheap. It's only the drugs and testings that are expensive, but still maybe drugs are sometimes more expensive than the drugs here in the States. But testing, I think it's much cheaper. And it's like in the US, you pay a lot for the service, for physician's services. But in China, that's minimum.
Is the expensiveness of drugs due to the influence of foreign companies more so? Because that seems to be what's implied in Dying to Survive.
Yeah, I mean, they decide on the price, right?
Yeah.
The Chinese government can negotiate with them, but I don't think they have a lot of bargaining power. Maybe in some cases, but not in all cases.
As a result of this movie, it's been widely reported, I guess, that there have been policy changes and government investment to funding drugs such as the one in the movie, like Gleevec. Mm-hmm. Was this a more of a reallocation of expenditure, or was there actual a boost in investment targeted for this?
I think it's... the government funding in health insurances has been increasing, but definitely including those expensive cancer drugs in the benefit package means that funding for other conditions will be reduced. Will not increase as much, or maybe even reduced.
This could be another public policy issue, right? Because most people are not needing access to these more expensive drugs. So this takes a lot of money out of,
right,
for most people, their healthcare benefits.
Right. But I think it's the same in the US. Cancer patients are very vocal. They get a lot of media coverage, and they're, I think, more organized than other patient groups.
What do you make of the fact that this movie is one of the top 10 grossing Chinese films? What do you think appealed about it to larger audiences?
Well, healthcare is it's a popular topic in China right now. A lot of people pay attention to it. And this movie, well, it's well made. The story is good. And
yeah, it's worth saying. Yeah. No, absolutely.
I mean, many of our guests, we end up actually, you know, giving them access to the movies that we're reviewing. But it seemed like a lot of the people I contacted to come on the show for this episode, like everybody had already seen this movie. had you seen this movie as a healthcare professional or just really as a as somebody's trying
movies.
To watch a good movie?
I try to enjoy it I don't think I can with all these years doing research on healthcare. I sometimes get upset with the bias that's that the movie was presenting.
Could you expand on that a little bit? Which what specific part of its perspective did you feel was off?
Like the movie, the whole movie was based on the assumption that the generic drug from India, it's a valid drug. It seems that it's effective, it's cheap, but that's in most of the cases that's not true. Like even in the real story, there has been reports showing that this generic. So the drug, the guy later helped his friends to get. It's not even sold in the pharmacies in India.
Oh wow.
So it's really questionable whether that's that's a valid generic drug. And I think the journalist took some samples and sent it for evaluation. And they found that the content of the active pharmaceutical ingredient, it's, I don't remember the exact percentage, but definitely less than 80% of the brand name drug.
Wow.
So those patients, they are not getting, even if the Indian pharmaceutical company applied for approval in China, I don't think China would grant it permission, because that's not a valid generic drug. And how does that affect patients' health? It's really hard to know.
That brings up an interesting issue of copyright, I suppose. Do you think there would be, based on this movie, any sort of movement by maybe even the Chinese government to produce generic drugs, like quality generic drugs, so they wouldn't have to deal with so much with these international pharmaceutical companies?
Yeah, there is already generic drug available, I think probably because of the quality is not so good. It doesn't have a large market share.
What do you think the solution to the problem presented by the movie would likely be, or the best possible solution?
That's really hard. So what the government now is doing is they try to negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies to lower the drug price. There are ways to do that, because sometimes the pharmaceutical companies are unwilling to lower the drug price because they cannot predict the sales volume. So if the price is attached to a certain amount of sales, then it's easier to get them to get the pharmaceutical companies to reduce the drug price. I think that's what China is trying to do. So instead of just negotiating for the price, they negotiate the price and the quantity.
Generally, do you have any? It's hard to prognosticate, of course, but do you have any predictions for how Chinese healthcare is likely to change in the next 10 to 20 years?
So the benefit package is, I think the benefit package won't get more, won't get too generous.
Mm-hmm.
that they will definitely change the payment system, the incentive structures now faced by the hospitals and physicians, because now we're using largely a fee-for-service system that really incentivizes overprovision of services, overprovision of drugs and testings. So that's definitely going to change. And also the fee schedule will need to change because services are really underpriced. Physicians, nurses, they are not getting enough pay for the services they provide. They can only make money from drugs and screening. And that's a really perverse incentive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's definitely going to change.
That's interesting. I got just a sort of context to a question. My family was all Soviet doctors, and they were all paid, you know, Soviet prices for doctoring. Is that also is that part of the thinking for not paying physicians too much just for working, connecting it to more equal pay under communism or under marketized communism?
Yeah, I think that's one factor. The other motivation for regulating the services is because the government want poor people to still to have access.
Mm-hmm.
So they should still be able to see a doctor, even if they don't have a lot of money. So the consultation fee is really low. I think at the primary care level, it's basically free. So you can see doctors for free. It's only when you go to the tertiary hospitals, you pay like $1 to see a doctor.
But the efficacy of that is limited because without paying, you can't pay for the actual treatments.
Right. Still, back then, it was a reasonable policy, I think.
And now it's less so?
Right, right.
Well, friends, that just about brings it to the end of this episode of Uproar in the Studio. Thank you again to Mitch Moxley and Hao Zhang.
Original music comes from Elliot Saltmarsh and Yehuda of Fist with a PH, and our art comes courtesy of Jay Castro.
Follow us on Twitter at ChinaFilmPod, like the Uproar in the Studio Facebook page, and maybe Venmo us at Reza-Said. And put Uproar in your description. Every penny counts in our quest to free Shkreli to spend the rest of his days on the open sea, surrounded by his own kind. And if you feel like it, have some thoughts or suggestions, email us at uproarinthestudio, all in one word, @gmail.com.
In 2 weeks, we'll be talking about the mermaid, but before we leave you this week, we just want to share some wisdom from the chairman.
To read too many books is harmful. We'll see you in 2 weeks.